That is what you call the total surrender to the divine will of the Guru, never questioning him for no moment. Now, the Guru, at another incarnation, is going to make you experience another type of association with him. That is the monkey relationship with his baby. The baby jumps on the monkey's back, pulls on, that's the do-it-yourself attitude, and mama reaches out, one limb here and one limb here, never letting go till she's got a one firm. In other words, she knows how to exist and survive. She fights the battle of life, demonstrating to baby monkey how to do it. Most of us pass through a guru-disciple relationship like a kitten with its mother. We've been nurtured all the way through our incarnations. We're nurtured to God by divine devotion and divine help and intercession all the time. But there comes a time when you got to take hold of the rein, the guru-disciple relationship, and you got to do the work. They can only carry you that far or nurture you that far. You got to finally stand up on your own. In other words, you got to come to a stage where you got to be master of yourself. You have to, no matter how slow and painful and how limited or how inefficient this mastery may appear to your consciousness or five senses, deep down in the inner self, that mastery is going on far more profound than it's, you can realize. And masters that's their work, to make you conscious of this thing. You need that Sadguru contact. I'm not saying you don't need it, because this is flesh. This is the way of righteousness. This is the laws of right action. That the profound effect of love of one being for another cannot be fully appreciated except by touch. It is not possible. If I look at you all and I say, I love you, I still would like to reach out and embrace you. Why? A mother reaches out to embrace her child. A child reaches out to embrace its parent. A lover reaches out to embrace the lover. The guru reaches out to embrace the disciple. And the guru reaches out to embrace God, which is again another master consciousness. And God reaches out to embrace us. But how is he embracing us? By human contact, by some form of contact. You can be meditating, and God can reach out through you and make contact through you, this presence of love, so intense, as if to say you slide into an invisible glove that fits your entire body of divine touch. One time I was driving through in Canada, and I saw a little brook, water running, myself and Sonny, a friend of mine. And there was a little grotto. I said, let's stop. It looks like a little shrine. Way out of the place, not too much. We came out, and I went up. It was a little Catholic shrine. There were all kind of crutches, things, everything for people who have been cured. And this was water was there. And I reached down, and I looked at the water, and then I put my right hand. I took a little to drink. But by the time my hand touched that water, I can feel the divine love flow right around like an invisible glove all around my hand. And it remained there for days while I traveled from Canada to Mexico. And all through that time, it emitted a perfume. And Sonny put his, and it was the same thing. And that very night when we were in Mexico, we were sitting down in the motel. And from 12 o'clock to 2 o'clock in the morning, the whole room was just flooded with this love, like you were sitting, like somebody had slid you in an invisible plastic sheet of love. You can, like if somebody was stroking you. A cat appreciates love from the human by stroking it. A lot of men or human beings will appreciate the same thing, not the same when you go to meet a guru. When a guru, there were many disciples that sit down with a guru and he would touch them. This is the contact, this is the darshan that's going on. This is that human contact. It is there all the time. But what is to realize when this thing is taking place in the impersonal aspects? When all around you is happening, you understand? Not only that one area, then you realize that you have reached this conscious to understand what's going on. This is what you want most.
Yeah, but a master, aside from you would go for the physical body, and of course you go for the astral body, then it might be there in animal form, or you have to approach the master. This is where a Satguru, to my mind, has the distinction between the gurus, because the Satguru is able to not only meet you on this plane or the astral plane, but then to meet you on all the other planes and guide.
Well, let me explain something. We use the word Satguru. We must be very aware of what we're saying, otherwise we're going to be fully confusing everyone concerning the word Satguru. There are only two types of masters: a manifested master and an ascended master. The so-called Satguru terminology is an implication to mean a manifested master, one who has achieved total ascension and realization in a past life and by divine command has returned to take on the responsibility of bringing uninformed beings back to God through example. An ascended master does not assume that responsibility. We are achieving ascended mastery. We are the ones who are working to become ascended masters. We are the sheep. There are only one shepherd. Therefore, they can only have one manifested master every so often in the world. But as we ascend into mastery and we assume the responsibility by divine command, we will be Satgurus when our time comes. Now, in spite of yourself and in spite of myself, God has already planned it for all of us to have our chance to be Satgurus. In other words, you'll get to heaven regardless of how long you take. It's not been planned out. You can't stay away from it. It'll be pushed into it. So in each incarnation or each generation or each cycle of life, Satgurus, or what we say manifested masters, will always be there for us. This is the assurance we have. This is why when truth is returned to us or brought back to us, it's never brought back by an ascended master. Truth is brought back to us by a manifested master that is called avatar, meaning the descent of spirit into the flesh again. You see?
God-man.
No. We ascend to the God-man state first. In other words, we must get our BAs in cosmic living in order to be MAs in cosmic living. You get the idea? So a master, when we turn the word master, we are looking at someone who is already fully illumined. Now, he's already chosen. A master is chosen already. He doesn't come of his own. A master's life is predicted long before he's born. That makes him a master, in our sense of the true master. His life has to be prophesied ahead of time. He has to have a specific mission in time. And he is trained to follow a certain line of knowledge that is totally universal at all times. So, in the Satguru, in the manifested master of a certain line of gurus, that life has been long predicted. And that much souls of that particular affinity or magnetic attraction will be drawn back up. Now, another manifested master is being born of another line, he draws that much of back. Because a manifested master is coming back primarily to do what has not been done by the ascended ones before. It's hard to assess the manifested master because he's an avatar already. Now, there are only two types of avatars or two types of manifested masters. There's only one type of ascended masters, but there are two types of manifested masters. Now, one type of the manifested master or Satguru, as we call it, are those who are sent back into the realm of consciousness to bring back erring souls to the reality that they are soul. And they are those who remain in the resurrected cycle principle, manifesting and not manifesting occasionally in that full body form to disciples of a higher evolution. And they are only strictly involved with the evolutionary nature of the universe and all its civilizations and various planets. They don't come out too much. And when they pass on, they don't pass on as a normal being. Such manifested masses go out of the body by performing Mahasamadhi, and exactly within 24 hours take the whole physical body and come back again and go about their work. And to their few advanced disciples, they will demonstrate that physical body to them all through time. And there will always be one Maha avatar who will remain on a planet to maintain that planet's stability in the cosmos. Each planet has a master avatar or a master. In other words, every planet has one of the sons of light constantly in the physical form guiding it. It never leaves that physical form. Master Babaji is one such avatar. He remains in the physical form, and when he was ready to throw off the physical form to be in the total cosmos, his sister asked him, if there is no difference between life and death, body or no body, why throw it off? And he says, for that reason I don't throw it off. And he became the deathless master. In other words, for this millennium, or for this particular world cycle, that master is still in the body form. Now, he has materialized in many forms to many people. I'll give a little illustration in my own life. One time I had this picture, and I wanted to frame this picture and make a lamp of this man, and put it in a lamp. But I didn't know how to design the lamp, and I was meditating that night, and all of a sudden I felt like I swooned and I fell asleep, if you want to call it that. But in that state, I was totally aware, and I can see all the pieces of the lamp precisely cut and measured, slowly coming down from a realm. I didn't know where it was coming from, like a white snow realm coming down and settling on like a golden table, and all the pieces fit themselves together. Next day, I went out and got those pieces, but I went to buy the bulb to fit inside of the lamp, and there were the socket and the bulb, you know these little socket and bulb that they have, this nice socket bulb, they were selling at that time at Woolworths for 25 cents complete, bulb and socket. I took the package up, one of them, and I hand the girl with the 25 cents. She put it in a sack. Myself and another friend were standing there because we were making a lamp together. She clipped it with a staple and she handed it to him, and I walked out. We got home and we opened the package to put it into the back of the lamp, and we found two inside, two bulbs, two sockets. We didn't pay 25 cents for more, we paid only one 25 cents piece. Now this, I realize, I'm not the only one that Master Babaji has done things like this too. I know another friend, he's done many things. In fact, he's the only person I know that anytime he said, Babaji, please help me this, it happens, without even trying. And this man is not even attempting to be a full-fledged disciple in any sense. When I met him, he had just overcome from a heart attack. He lives in California now. And his mother they lived in a high building, you know, and he had a little rum and coke, but there was no ice, and it was in the summertime, and he said, Mumsy, you know, he speaks English, he's an English fellow, you know, Mumsy, we should have a little rum and coke, a little nip and tuck. And she says, oh, but George, we have no ice. And she was the only woman in the whole area that would have a nice box. Everybody in the area's got refrigerator. He says, Mom, well, I don't know what to do. What do you boys want, rum and coke? I says, yeah, okay, George, we'll go along. Well, Babaji, I need a piece of ice. He had just read the autobiography, and he wasn't jokingly, because I said, you call on the masters, they will fulfill your wishes. Okay, Babaji, I need a piece of ice. This is 12 o'clock in the day. I laughed, you know, jokingly. And he walked to the veranda of the house. It was open. And he looked down, and at the stairway, he had to come down the stairway, right there was a 50-pound block of ice. Now, this shook him up for a while. He came downstairs, and he asked everybody in the neighborhood who that ice belonged to. Now, he just overcome from a heart attack, and he cannot lift objects up, and he had to walk. And we went down and with him, and he asked and asked for a long while. Nobody says, we didn't order no ice. There's no car coming down this road with ice. And if it does, they blow their horn, or they have a bell. And his mother, and he told his mother, he says, Mumsy loved his ice. He says, well, George, it's not ours because we didn't order it, and the ice man doesn't come around today. So he says, well, if nobody don't pick it up in the next hour, I'm going to use it. Well, you imagine a 50-pound ice in the blazing sun in Montreal, Canada, about 112 degrees. How long can 50-pound ice last? It'll be all melted out, right? An hour passed, and that ice was still there. Nobody claimed it. So he walked down, and he went to that ice and lifted it up. No sooner he lifted it up, you would think it would be a puddle of water, right? There was not a single puddle of water. It was just one outline, a square outline where the ice rested. And it was like a distinct line, like if someone took a crayon and just marked the outline of the ice right there. He picked that ice up and started up the stairway. Well, we ran down to help him. To our surprise, it was like if the ice was lifting him up the stairway, bringing him up to the top. We brought him up. Well, I tell you, I drank the rum and coke, but there was no actual flavor in that rum and coke, no matter how much rum I put in that glass. The ice and everything, couldn't get a flavor of the rum. I felt I was cheated after drinking the rum and coke, because I couldn't taste the flavor of the rum in the rum and coke. Well, I said, George says to me, he says, man, this is too serious, because he didn't expect something like this to happen. Next day he asked around. Anyway, that ice lasted for quite a while in an ordinary box that they put it in. But what was peculiar was this. From that day on, he never wanted to talk anything about yoga. And he didn't want even to see the autobiography of a yogi in the house. He gave it away. Right away, he gave away that book. And I would go and meet him with my friend in the car. And as soon as we got in the car, he would say, Sonny, Adano, let me go out. I know you two guys want to talk about spiritual things. I just want to go and have a rum and coke. And he wouldn't stick around. But it's a peculiar thing. We see him often, and he meditates. But he says to me, he says, Babaji has never failed me yet in all these things. Even though he knows I'm a wayward disciple, in some way, he has never failed to materialize things that I needed. And actually materialize them. And not just say that somebody come and give it to him. This is one peculiar part about it. So, it is strange. As I say, he doesn't even, like say, okay, I need a pair of shoes. And then before you go to buy the pair of shoes, somebody says, George, I got a pair of something. Or, somebody gives you something, bring you a gift. No. He make an outright statement. He says, Babaji, I need it. And it's strange that you find. He come home in that apartment, and there's a package right there. Got no name, nothing, but when you open it, it's there. And this was puzzled him to this day, and if you say to him, George, sit down, meditate, really sit down and try to follow spiritual life, he says, no. He says, well, I'm too long gone. If he can't help me like a pussycat now, he ain't gonna help me. In other words, he's accepted the cat-kitten relationship with this guru. Right. He's thrown his entire, he says he knows he's reached that stage, he's gotta pull him out. But the funny thing, he would meditate, and he would feel himself already to go out, into that consciousness. But then he looks back and he figures the obligation to his mother, she's old, and he's the only surviving heir. And then he thinks of his two sons, and then he says, stop this meditation. This is my obligation here, of course.
Here's a illumination and no more shoes.
What?
Well, he's pretty wise in a way.
No, in a way, he's a wonderful person. Here's a man who would not lie. He doesn't swear. He wouldn't cheat you. He would borrow money, and he'd work to pay you back every penny plus. And if he's got money and you ain't got, he'd take out a check and say, here, you put how much you want. The only one thing is, he says, I can't sit down to meditate to feel that bliss. I need a rum and coke. He says, that's it. He says, if that's so, the only vice they're going to hold against me for cosmic consciousness, well, they can hold it against me. Exactly.
Don't want that rolling
coke. No, but he's, and the funniest thing, doctors have tested him, and he's not an alcoholic. No matter how much this man drink, it doesn't show up in the bloodstream. Can't figure it out yet. This is the last time, man. He says, it's funny. You know, he drinks a whole quart like that every day. And he does not wobble, or, you know, you can drink and you can tell a person is drunk. This man is a straight sober. To him, that is something necessary for him in this incarnation. In other words, he's come to the realization that he's working out some last condition in him. But this peculiar thing, though. You know, I lie down to sleep in various places and I can feel the vibrations of people when they sleep, you know, wherever they sleep. So I was visiting him and he says, Adana, you feel to lie down to sleep in various places and I can feel the vibrations of people when they sleep, you know, wherever they sleep. So I was visiting him and he says, Adana, you feel tired? There's my bed over there. Lie down. My mother's bed is in the other room. Don't go there. Use this one. And I try to lie in his bed. It's like ants crawling all over the wall. Could not get in. The vibrations were hard to get into this, you know. But that's peculiar. With all that inner turmoil that's going on in those vibrations, there was a tremendous innocence and purity of consciousness present in them, which I admire so much in the man himself. I says, here is a man who has the depths of being spiritually realized only because he's committed in this physical form to a mother and two sons. And this is the only turmoil that goes on. And whenever he thinks of it, and he thinks of the problem, he takes a drink. But the thing what made him drink rum and coke, and he doesn't attribute it to his problems. The way he attributed it was that when he had his heart attack, you see, the doctor told him, he asked the doctor, should I stop drinking alcohol? And the doctor says, no, a little now and then is not too bad. And that was what kept him going.
That's what kept him going. Oh, he's an amazing person.
I see a lot of people have to go without.
Yes, I know, keep you folks to live. Oh, boy.
Thank you. It's going to be an excellent recording. It's over there, but I have to connect it.
Sorry, folks, that is the end of the tape, and I'm sorry to say that the rest of this side of the tape is blank. Try the other side for a change.
Consciousness after you have tried it. Concentrating on the modern youth and adult who seek cosmic consciousness. See, cosmic consciousness is God realization, and great sages have achieved this. In modern man, we want a do-it-yourself process and an instant experience. So we find we end up applying chemistry to ourselves. It is being classified as drugs in the modern society. The question has come up, can drugs produce cosmic consciousness? Oh, this is one of the biggest challenges to modern man. Can it really produce cosmic consciousness? And if the experience is really cosmic consciousness after you have tried it, then we must have certain tests that must validate itself over a long tradition of great sages who have walked that path and live as testimony to that test. Then we can say drugs can produce cosmic consciousness. But if the test that is presented for the man who has used it and he fails the qualifications required by that test, then the result is that he didn't get cosmic consciousness. Well, tonight I'll try to show how it is the similarities experienced by chemistry on the human body in relation to the experiences achieved by meditation and the results achieved by realized masters on the path of truth. Man essentially is soul, and the soul nature is joy or bliss, and also omnipresence. Man does not have a soul. I've tried to make this clear to those who have heard this before, and to those who have not heard it, we'll clear that point up immediately, and then we can go on to why man is experimenting on his body to find out. The scriptures point out that God breathed into man breath of life, and man became living soul. It did not say that man became a living body. So from that fact we have to work with now. Man is soul. Then the soul's nature is joy. It can't be sorrow. The soul's nature has got to be omniscience, that is, all-powerful and demonstrable. The soul's nature has got to be all-peaceful or omnipresence. And that doesn't limit you to this little ball of a planet. It involves every aspect of creation. Also, the soul's nature is the eternal life in the non-corruptible body. Now, sages who have tested the soul's nature and have lived the soul's nature remain as a challenge to man, like my thumb to my four fingers, apart and distinct. Now, man wants a shortcut method because he's caught up in his convention, his culture, and his language, and time is running out to keep up with the competition. So the wise man wants to know more than the other man in order to stay above his fellow man. This is the complex condition we are involved today. Youth is caught in a straitjacket from 0-1 to 18 years of age by conventional laws. And the adult is caught in a straitjacket from 0 to 72 by conventional social security problems and welfare activities and the competition of survival with other nations. Where is the man going to have the chance to realize his soul? So he's confronted with a challenge, either to experiment by methods handed down by sages or by pharmacology, that is, drugs. So, we must see the symptoms. One of the conditions of the religious life of masters is knowledge that comes after the man has achieved consciousness, whereby he can dip in to the reservoir of peace and take it out and use it. Also, peace is a natural expression of that man. He's living in peace. He isn't searching. He feels it, he lives it, he emanates it. And those who are involved with it can automatically tap into it. Now, but it's permanizing his mechanism every day and becoming stronger and stronger. These are qualities or conditions that manifest themselves in the lives of saints, or masters, as we call them, masters of life. Now, if you are tense, you need peace. But how do you get tense? It has to be something that interferes with the natural flow of your life. Now, if from 01 to 018, this is age period of the restricted school child, the frustration cycle is so great that mama and daddy wants him to be the top of the class all the time. Mama and daddy is competing with the next door neighbor at the same time. Mama and daddy is never home at the same time. And the insecurity is caught up. And the widening association and transportation facilities broaden the gap of frustration and insecurity for 1 to 18, let alone from 1 to 76. You see what is happening now. So right away you get a headache. Gee, I can't see the light, I can't write, I can't read. I need a buffering. But what is a buffering? Is it something to hold back? To allow something to come true? Yes. Best form of buffering, aspirin. Our advertising is pushing it in on us. We are confronted with it. Take the escape route. So we run to buffering right over there. Drink it down. Relaxation comes back. You can cope with the next frustration coming up. See, where 1 to 18 alone is caught in it. 1 to 76 is caught in it. Now, every time the relief comes from the application of an external agent to allow the life flow to return to its natural stability, a central dependency begins. Why? Because man is a creature of habit. He soon develops a habit rhythm and cannot avoid his habit rhythm. So normally, he goes through the gestures of habit. Soon, the buffering is not strong enough because the headache entails certain repercussions that become stronger and block the natural life flow of the mechanism, block the association with nature. Therefore, we need a stronger buffering. So, we go back to the druggist. Let's make something to compress this condition or push it out, break it out, do something. So we go to the tranquilizers. It's another way of breaking up that tension, breaking up that dam. It's like the logs going down a river, and suddenly they get dammed up at the mouth of the river, and the logs can't move no more. And we send down one of those log trains, you know, or log boats, and they go and you move them, and sometimes you break a leg because of you slip. This can happen in the drug process of trying to break up a tension principle. You may overdose. Now, the frustration level is so great because of the pressures at home, the competition and the survival pattern, and the insecurities, that we resort to one fallacy. And that is, we say to ourselves, an overdose will end it. If an underdose doesn't cure it, an overdose may end it. So we take an overdose. And sometimes that overdose is fatal. Now, again, we are trapped. It's a funny thing to be trapped so hopelessly, without any connecting link, without any reason of getting out, without any motivation. What is it all for? Well, the sages state in their lives that man is soul, And this so-called trap is only hurdles placed in his path of life from birth to death, whereby he would have an opportunity by trial and error, by conscious effort, to discover his soul. That doesn't matter if he doesn't want to accept it. These things are placed there for him to realize this eventually. But they need certain rules or disciplines to follow that or to get out of it. And these disciplines are the contrast to the quick relief by drug. These disciplines begin to teach you the nature of your mechanism, how it does function, how to utilize this nature so that you can work in the restrictive pattern. All right, youth is learning because they cannot help but learn in this restricted pattern, and the professors are forced to teach. We are faced with the fact is that I can't do my homework, I can't keep up, I'm going to fail my examinations. Therefore, I will cram. And it will take all kinds of chemicals to allow us to stay awake to cram. And if possible, we will cheat. This is no discredit to no human being. These are conditions already set up there for every human being, race, color, creed, for all nationalities of all creation, in every planet of life or two. This is behavioral and emotional conditions all there. We are pushed into it and like scrubbed out. You know? That's what is going to push us on. So we get stronger and stronger drugs to relieve the tensions that occur. But every relief gives us a sort of semi-peace, a semi-second wind, a semi-form of alertness. It sustains us for a brief moment until we become dependent in a habit pattern and therefore cannot exert or generate from within the physical structure the natural life flow that is there, that feeds the brain and allow it to really realize its true nature. The latest experiments show that these drugs that relieve tension and allow us to have some semi-form of relaxation carries certain symptoms that give us the false belief that we have achieved some kind of awareness. But we don't have no yardstick measurement whereby we can refer to, because a school teacher is not a saint. In the second place, a disciple is not a student in the school. These, we would have to have measurements now to work with. Now, the student in school, when he breaks down the tension by applying some agent, some chemical agent to break down that tension, automatically he feels a sensation of relief, and this portion of the brain is drawn and he feels like suspended. Now, right across here, the sensation of peace, because it's pulled back, can be felt. Release it and you get back into the tension state. Now, the drug will pull by intoxicating it, that is, internally poisoning that situation or suspending that situation to relieve it. But it will not bring bliss, it cannot bring joy. It will give a tremendous amount of peace and relaxation, and it cannot bring knowledge or intuitive awareness. It can bring memory patterns, memory associations. It can bring ideas that we have refused to accept when we were not using the drug. It will bring them up to the surface. And now we have to accept them regardless of how horrible or how beautiful they are. We're faced with it because we have given up volition. We have no more volition temporarily when the drug applies its control over this area of the brain. The alpha rhythms go in check. Now, this is no discredit to the drug. This is its purpose, to relieve the tensions that are there. But to give the sensations or the feelings that you have a temporary peace. It doesn't say it is a peace produced that can allow us to live that way normally and allow us to focus normally. It is peace nevertheless. But it's not cosmic consciousness. It's all memory patterns. It's not inspiration either. Now, more advanced drugs allow us to experiment beyond the range of relieving a tension, achieving a relaxation, and possibly trying to trigger some form of awareness and allow us to try to evaluate that form of awareness. What is it all about? But we don't have no yardstick measurement to relate it to, so we are confused. And the experimenter himself, having no yardstick measurement himself, he too can mislead you in the experiment. And then you don't know if his experiences are genuine, and if what you are having is genuine or permanent and workable, because he doesn't know if his. He may only arrive at certain theories concerning that condition. Now, the saints don't theorize. They all teach one same thing all the time. And they leave testimony with their bodies, and we can use it as yardstick measurements. So we have to use tangible facts to compare or set them up and see where the value lies and the methods employed. The student and the chemist or scientist will try now to find stronger agents to produce this sensation of peace from the relaxed state and the condition of heightening the awareness through the five senses. That is, the sight will be more magnified, the hearing become more magnified, the smell, the taste, and the touch. Because these are the only five avenues that this mechanism called a body can seem to reach out and associate with. Now, one having an experience under that particular chemical agent, talking to someone who has never applied that agent to his body, there can never be a common bond of communication of no time. It's only natural the parent and the child is going to drift apart. You cannot say, because you drank coffee, tell me the taste that I have never tasted coffee and hope people accept it. What it will taste like? We both will have to taste the thing, and if we agree that this thing is good, then that's all right. But if you don't agree, something is wrong. So parents getting huffed up because one part or section of their family life is torn for lack of communication cannot blame that party. They got to blame something that is lacking in themselves too. And they got to blame the educators and the experimenters for having no yardstick measurement to validate what they're saying. And man is not going to tamper too far because he's scared of the survival pattern of his life. And convention is not going to allow him to stay too long experimenting to find out if he's got the right technique to this understanding of himself without imposing safety guards. You see, he's trapped again. The society and man is already trapped in this phenomenon. Now, the strongest agent so far discovered by man that would present a measurement of awareness has been the LSD movement. Now, when I use it, don't try to belittle any person, as a youth or a grown person or any individual. We're looking at this thing objectively and see what these people are doing or trying to do before we can objectively evaluate. The lecture being, does drugs produce cosmic consciousness? You see? So we have to have an open mind to what we're talking about to understand the value to and the measurements and the possible way that cosmic consciousness can be achieved when the techniques are presented and when the agents are presented. Now, this one chemical agent has produced by the action certain conditions, symptoms, and certain reactions. It's easy for one man to join another man after they cannot communicate to each other, because men love to huddle like monkeys. He cannot stay by himself. Put a man out in the woods by himself, sooner or later he's going looking for another man, because he wants to communicate. This is his nature. Now, a person discovering the use of the chemical wants to communicate. If he doesn't, then something is wrong. That's the very origin of conversion, and that is the start of the holy wars. Even when the saints taught the truth and gave their disciples certain experiences in cosmic consciousness, they in turn could not stand the shock, want to convert some other individual into it, and because they were not evolved enough in that consciousness, conflict began. It's only natural. Now, the chemist has left a chemical agent for man to find out what his mechanism is to a certain extent, and to give him a certain type of peace, a certain type of relief, and a possible type of expansion of awareness. But it did not say it gave the man permanent peace. It didn't say it gave the man intuitive development. It didn't say it gave the man wisdom. It didn't say it gave the man cosmic consciousness. Now, here is a typical example of one of the tests that the sages put forward of a person who has claimed that they experience some form of expanded consciousness or awareness by the agent, chemical agent, versus what they themselves have achieved through their own meditative process. There was a man who applied a chemical agent and had a tremendous extension of awareness and came to a spiritual teacher and said, I have achieved cosmic consciousness. And the teacher looked at him and says, well, I don't think you have. I think you have found the whole topography or the whole geography of your subconscious mind for the first time and actually saw how it functions. Oh no, I have had cosmic consciousness. I have felt the presence of God. The sage looked at him and says, all right, if you have, we're here in America, and I was born in India. There's a city called Calcutta. On Road Andrew Street is the name of the street. Room 14, which is a store. There is an Indian man wearing a turban right there at this moment. He's selling sweetmeats. I want you now, right where in your body here, don't go out of this room, send your cosmic consciousness to that man and let him give you one of those sweetmeats and transport it back into this room and let us eat it. You look blankly at that Indian teacher and realize he did not have cosmic consciousness. And the Indian teacher says, all right, and he reached up into the air, brought his hand down and says, here, eat. The label and everything was tagged on the package. And to double check, they phoned. He paid the phone bill for the man to double check in India to find out if there was such a place called Andrew Street, Room 14. And the man claimed that he lost a piece of candy, that some kid stole it at that particular instant in time. Now, this is the biggest shock to that man. And I would say it would be a shock to anyone confronted with such testimony. But this was not intended to frighten the man. It was only intended to make the man realize that claims pertaining to cosmic consciousness can be from certain levels or references not as valid as they seem, and anyone claiming it would be hailed as a messiah. But the sages are here to prevent such so-called false messiahs appearing. Real saints live simple lives like you and I. They don't go around shouting to the public. But whenever a principle of truth is challenged, they rise up to the fore. They are the St. Georges of truth. They face the dragon of ignorance and cut its head off right there, confronting you with the fact. And that's the end of the association. They don't talk no more about it. Well, the man once said to him, then how can I achieve what you have done? And the sage said to him, you have to meditate. He says, but what is meditation? He says, well, then this is an entire different thing to what you've accustomed yourself to. Because meditation is a process of living. It involves living. It's not escaping from living. In fact, it's taking on the responsibilities of living for the first time. So the man said to the saint, where is the scriptural truth of that? He said, well, in the scriptures they say that one great master came to teach the world. He said, I have come that ye may have life more abundantly. And in so doing, he pointed out the relationship of life abundantly, not in terms of material objects. Actual life flow, not restricted by tension, not restricted by headaches or sickness or illness, not restricted by frustration, but for the first time can flow through the brain, through the senses, and function in a material world and solve the so-called insecurities and the instabilities of the existence. The man realized that he had to re-evaluate all that he knew about his chemistry and what he thought cosmic consciousness would mean to him, because he had one tangible proof in front of the sage. After the sage had performed the act, he noticed that the sage was serenely peaceful. For days, this sage was ill, in the same situation. And there was no sense of tiredness, no sense of yearning of irritability, while he was constantly irritable and agitated. But he noticed at the same time, the degree of his agitation, irritability, began to diminish in the presence of the sage. Because the sage was always dipping into meditative awareness and was setting the stage for this man to recognize something about himself. The man, not using as much bufferins or whatever it is to maintain a hold back on the pressure of his consciousness, soon realized that in the presence of the sage, he too was diminishing the use. Now the sage said to him, this process leads to cosmic consciousness. And the first thing you will experience in it when you start off is peace, joy, bliss. Now the man knows a little from past experience what peace is. But he does not know what bliss or joy is. There are different degrees of awareness and experiences and feelings. And bliss has a transmutation principle in it. It transforms the cells. It slows down the physiological aging of the cells while you chronologically go on with your calendar year life, whereas the drug has no such possibility because there is a slow deterioration. And one can tell the difference of two individuals, the drug taker and the meditative practitioner, the slow loss of light and glow in the mechanism is diminishing. There's a tendency to be dry, the skin tends to dry itself. There's a tension, there's a pulling on the skin. There's a tendency for retreat. There's a tendency to shut out. And there is no vitality. There is no sense of buoyancy. There don't seem to be a zest for living. Whereas the meditative man is full of zest for living, not involving to take away anything from anyone or possessing anything. He's alive. He infuses life where he goes. In fact, it is permeating every one of it. It's a power that seems to pulsate from him. This peculiar condition was observed by this man in the presence of the sage after a while. That made him start to test now the values, to test the laws involving the changes occurring. He then asked the saint how to meditate and what meditation would involve more for him. The saint said, "You have to close your eyes because that is the reference point in the human mechanism whereby you can adjust your consciousness and experience joy, bliss, and peace. So, the man being a scientist and also interested in cosmic consciousness and also having some religious affiliation, he wanted to bridge the gap. He did not just want to know the information. He wanted to see the common gap between religion as it was presented in the form of the church, which he classified as churchianity. He wanted to see science linked into this principle, and he wanted to see the testimony of the sage's experience. He wanted to evaluate this thing for himself now. So he decided to question the saint. "Why do you want me to close my eyes to look in? I took a pill and that went in just the same and it brought out an experience." And the sage says, "Well, what traditional authority says taking the pill produces such results? What traditional authority says that your result is standardized? I am saying to you, by traditional authority, by experience, if you apply this attitude, the result is always the same. It doesn't vary. It is there. It's a constant established condition. And you're not going to see two different things, what you see and I see and our experience. This particular condition is the same for both of us. It doesn't vary." Now, the scientist was then interested to experiment. But he says, "Now, my traditional authority does not come from me as an individual telling you, because you don't have to accept my word. My traditional authority comes from my textbook," he says, "come from the scriptures of the world. Just as your textbook comes from the computed data of your experiments." He says, "I'll quote your scriptures because you are a Christian born in a Christian society, a reference point. So he said, seek ye first the kingdom of God which is within you, and all these things will be added unto you. Now, you put the drug within you, don't you? The scientist said yes. Then I say, look within you. That's my traditional authority. Because to seek is to look in. Look somewhere. It's already said to look, seek. Where? It gives me position of a reference point. Within. Who? You or I. Both of us. Me. That means we both got to look inside. And this inside is being classified as kingdom of God. That is to say, reservoir of cosmic consciousness. Because we are all seeking to experience cosmic consciousness. And you say that when you put the pill inside, cosmic consciousness flows out. I say no. When I look in by my process, cosmic consciousness did flow out. We have already tested it before by the trying to transport a piece of candy from India to here. So, do you see why I say you look in? And you, I don't accept the fact that you put in by the mouth. So, the scientist then went along with the sage to close his eyes and look in. He says, now, seek ye first the kingdom of God which is within you and its righteousness. He says, that means to you as a scientist, the right attitude. Now, when you put the pill in, did you have the right attitude? Were you looking for an experience? Were you looking for excitement? What were you looking for? What was the right attitude? What was the rightness in putting it inside? I am looking in for my right attitude is that I want to see this cosmic consciousness and the mechanics of my nature come forward and reveal to me my true identity. Now, if you are doing it by putting the object in the mouth and you're doing it from fear that you'll be discovered by your friends or fear of being called chicken or fear of being some other thing, then there is no right attitude. I'm not doing it from fear. I'm not doing it to please anyone. I'm doing it because this is a research into my basic nature. And that research tends to validate that I am soul. Now, if your attitude is right, then let us see if it works. The scientist says he was experimenting, trying to find out. But he did not say he was seeking God or cosmic consciousness. He's trying to explore, trying to find effects. Now, he looked in, and the first thing he was told to see was a light emanating from the forehead. He gazed for quite a while, and there appeared a light in the forehead. And the light was so bright that he couldn't understand it. He opened his eyes, and he still saw it outside of himself. Now, he didn't put agent to his mouth to acquire this light. It was just a matter of going in and closing, and the light came. But he noticed, at the same time, while the light was coming, there was a sensation of peace. And at the same time, joy, for the first time, started to well up from his heart. And the sensation of bliss, like an electrical flow, was passing through his tissues. And he felt like if he was becoming a young man again. The skin was pulling into a certain condition of youthfulness. Now, the sage said to him after 4 hours of looking in himself, open your eyes but don't move and see what you can adjust to this environment. See how long? Now, the sage said to him after 4 hours of looking in himself, open your eyes, but don't move, and see what you can adjust to this environment. See how long what you've experienced will remain with you. To his surprise, that sensation, that light, remained for 7 days, getting stronger and stronger each day. Now the sage said to him, did the pill you use produce such a result? Now he says, are you finding yourself smoking? He says, no. He says, you have a headache? He says, no. Do you feel intensely hungry or do you want to fight somebody? No. Are you satisfied that you're a human being in this world? He says, yes. He says, have you any animosity now to fellow men from arguments and so? No. I accept them as they are. And then the saint says, now, you've just begun this understanding of cosmic consciousness. From now on, we will place the real workload on you. We're going to give you the real workload to go into cosmic consciousness. You have bridged one gap. You've bridged the gap of depending on a physical agent to make certain internal changes. Now you're going to apply volition. He said, did you lose your willpower? Did you find yourself helpless under the condition of meditation? He said, no. He says, I felt I could do anything I want. I felt no restriction. He says, then we got something to measure by. Says, okay, you have no loss of volition, no loss of will. Let us then go deeper into meditation. He spent a few months with the saint, meditating day in and day out, realizing his nature. And in the subtle moments, he would see and feel and know certain consciousness passing down that were not experienced when he took the drug for the first time. There were levels of awareness that he did not knew existed. And he had taken the drug many times, hoping to achieve an awareness of the inner self. But what he did remember, or what he placed on record, that every time he repeated the intake of the drug, it was the same total copy of his subconscious mind. Nothing more was added. What he saw from the first time was always there, and in fact, certain incidents became more pronounced all the time, and they shifted around according to the mood he was in at the time. But nothing new was ever added. So he realized he was shortchanged. But this new awakening from this new technique of going into himself, he saw for the first time in a light, in a peace, and the various levels of being going on in himself. And he realized now that here was the first time he was experiencing truth of his nature. The sage then said, if you think that the process of meditation satisfies what you've experimented upon and experienced, do you find any repercussions? Do you find any drawbacks? Do you see any after effects that are detrimental to you? Do you see the fulfillment of the claims of the process? And the scientist, after evaluating and writing up his paper, was his final statement to the sage before he left. I wish I can start all over with what I know right now and really go to work on my being. And the sage said to him, why wish to start all over? Why not go on improving where you are right now from what you have got? In other words, the experience of the past is valid because you got a reference point whereby this new experience is going to outweigh the other. This is the first time you got something to measure. If you did not have that one, you can't measure it. And he says you would be in the same position like your child and you. He would have the experience of you not having it. How can you communicate? Now you have both experiences which you can evaluate. He says now, but you are not compelled to tell the other person to do the same thing. It's up to the other person to discover and want this evaluation of himself. Tonight, before we have some answers and questions concerning to what I've said, we will apply the method that the sages have left us to experience this consciousness in ourselves. And this is meditation. We close the eyes, keep the spine straight. Keep the mind at a point between the eyebrows, or the reference point. This reference point, from traditional authority of the saints, states, if thine eye be single, the body is full of light. That is to say, if the two physical eyes are focused into a single position at the point between the eyebrows, thus producing single visionness, light in the body will come out. The validity of this light is that the body is already matter in a congealed form, and matter in a congealed form is already light according to the Einsteinian principles and according to traditional authority of the scriptures that God made man out of the light principle. Because in his own image, that would mean the cosmic consciousness germinated the human mechanism out of atomic matter. And in its own likeness, it would have to endow it with the capacity of total awareness. That would mean affecting the atomic mass. Not imagining that there is an association with the atomic mass. It would have to definitely be identified with the atomic mass, thereby proving that God is in man. As we close our eyes and watch in between the eyebrows, and we listen with the right ear to the audible live stream, we will link up now in consciousness. The light that will come there is a sort of a luminescence. It has three colors: gold, blue, and white. The outer ring is gold. The inner ring is blue, and the third inner ring is white, in the shape of a star. You cannot imagine it. It exists there as such, and is brought to focus on its own qualifications, its own magnetic pull. Now, as you gaze there, you'll find your mind having a tendency to drift. This is natural, because this is a moving universe. It's not a stationary universe. It's not a static universe. And the object is to be outside of that static pull, hence the term ecstasy, ecstatic. Now, as you watch, and the mind having this tendency to drift, it may drift to an idea or a thought pattern concerning some past experience of the subconscious mind. If it does, sooner or later it will end up generating frustration, and the vital life energy will be blocked again. Now, if you find the mind drifting away to some idea or thought concerning the future, sooner or later it will generate anxiety, and that too will block the life flow. Now, if the mind would center itself on the idea of now, the present, the life flow begins to flow normally, naturally, and therapeutic. It starts the process of self-healing, self-alignment of the cells, and a gradual electromagnetizing of the spinal column, and the awakening of the intuition. Hence, the mind stays in the conscious idea of now, the thought of now, here, eternal now, no end. While your mind is centered on the now, you will notice that you are breathing extremely slow. And there are brief moments or intervals between each breath as they become longer and longer, separating from each other. There seems to be an internal suspension occurring. Now, slowly open the eyes, but not completely, partially, but don't move. Try to be still aware of this body in a state of suspended peace. try to feel the bliss that is permeating the mechanism. Try to be aware of the joy passing over the entire surface area of the body. Feeling it welling up and flowing normally. Now again, close those lids and dive deep in the inner awareness of the consciousness, feeling your consciousness expanding out beyond the surface area of the skin. Like an electrical wave, your consciousness is hooked on to that electrical wave, flowing past the skin into space and time, into the very bedrock of the atomic structure, where there is no boundary, total spacelessness. Slowly open the eyes, but not completely. Still holding on to the peaceful effects and the inner joy that is flowing up from the reservoir of consciousness. Slowly close it and dive deeper again into infinite awareness, feeling the indwelling spirit passing as a vital electric charge through your entire body. Bringing about total surrender to the divine light. beloved masters of the universe, bless this meditation with thy presence and permeate our consciousness with the divine truth. Transmute ourselves from corruption to non-corruption. And grant us the full realization of enlightenment. The perfume of love, universal, is flowing through this room now. And the senses can absorb it. The incense of wisdom is permeating the room now, infusing the brain with intuitive awareness. The divine glow of warmth, of the universal strength and fortitude, is permeating the room now, flowing out and in and around our bodies. We feel our oneness in everything. Now slowly open the eyes. Gradually adjusting back to the environment, but don't move. Feeling the electromagnetic energies permeating your cells, infusing it with life. Flowing from the reservoir of consciousness. Open the eyes completely, but still don't move. Adjusting to the physical world. Try to see how long this effect remains with you while you are conscious. Employ volition to hold on to its effect. Thank you. You might have lots of questions you would like to shoot. Or you're too filled with your portable paradise now. You found the reservoir of peace and bliss in a light. No one can take it from you. You have access to it any time of the day, night, any part of the universe you go. You have access to it.
Meditation, are there
different stages that one could go through, like the passive stage and then the active in meditation?
Tonight was just the
passive one. Yes, you see, the body is full of tension, and therefore if you employ a tranquilizer, you relieve the tension. That's a passive effect. Now, the meditation produces that effect naturally. But then, that doesn't say you neglect your existence, because the sages don't want you to be irresponsible. They want you to generate volitional activity. It's the will that directs all activity. It's not reason or logic. It's the will. Eventually, I will get up. I reason to get up doesn't prove it. You still have to exert will upon a body. So activity in meditation, in the active state, is now, it begins. The workload of activity begins now. How long you apply the holding on effect of the volition on this electromagnetic charge of God's life power on this body form and deal with your fellow men in a right way is active meditation. You see the how simple the thing becomes now? How living and dynamic the thing is now? Because there is no room for non-creative activity. It's all creative activity.
Meditation is a continual process.
Yes. It's from the restful state or God state of eternal inner rest of pure reservoir peace to outward creative activity. So sages assume responsibility of living in the world.
Yes,
to act in the world. They do not go away from the world.
But that comes from saying they pray without ceasing.
Right. It's exactly the process. But you must be able to recognize the results that you are seeking. Because if you can recognize it now, you know you have tapped it. It hasn't gone any place, it's still there. Every time your willpower ignites it or triggers it, it's there. And if you are in doubt, you just close the eyes and accelerate it by half open, half closing it occasionally. You have the accelerator like a car. You still have the ignition switch, and the gas tank is full of peace. Yes.
How much effort does it take to get the effect?
How much effort it takes to release this?
Well, suppose the person is very busy and suppose there is a great deal of tension.
Mm-hmm.
Then how much do they have to practice prior to getting this result?
Well, as I said earlier, if the scientist had to put extra pills every day to get the same thing, but cause the cells to deteriorate, this here is hair, but you don't, just said to the lady, if you want to trigger it again, you do like that, and start it all over again, if you feel it's waning off. But it can't wane off completely, because it's an electromagnetic charge. The battery, it's like a two pieces of metal here, that can't act as a magnet. I take an electrical wire and I pass it around and put it to a battery and it electromagnetizes it. Now it will pick up another piece of object. And any time I want to reactivate it, it's there.
You hold. Are we supposed to be able to do start this effect within, say, 5 minutes work?
Yeah.
And then do what when it's off?
Well, do you feel it wearing off?
Some of it.
All right. Yeah.
And then do what when it wears off?
Well, do you feel it wearing off?
Some of it.
All right, then close the eyes again. Slowly open it, but not completely. Do you feel the thing charging up back again?
Perhaps.
Well, as you automatically do that a few times, in 10 minutes, if you can do this, open and close, like you ever see a Navy flashlight communicating across from one ship to another? If you can move this function of the lid of the eyes in 10 minutes, 15, 20 times, you would automatically recharge the energy back. You are recharging the thing. If you do it 4 or 5 times in 10 minutes, that much is recharged. How many times you compress this function, that much is, but you're applying volition. That means you are aware of what you're doing and handling it yourself. You are in charge of the flow.
Do you have to shut your eyes completely or just not quite?
In the beginning stages, to enhance it is to close the eyes completely. But as it becomes natural habit, it will automatically go on because man is a creature of habit. Sooner or later, this becomes a habitual automatic thing. For instance, that I close my eyes and I go into it, but I can keep my eyes and go into it now. But you couldn't see it, but you felt it pass through the room. You see, this is the phenomenal part of the thing, or the truth of the thing, that while I'm awake in the active state, I am tapping into, or I'm orbiting exactly with this planet. I'm orbiting with this life principle. I'm hooking into this principle. Now, when I slow down in the passive state and close my eyes, I'm doing exactly the same. But I want this awareness in the conscious waking state. I don't want to live a passive, irresponsible state, because there is no productivity of consciousness there. That doesn't say we should not go into this state and sit back and relax. But it is to be able to transfer this flow from passive to active. But that doesn't say you're going out to hit each other on the head and try to convert the other person, because this is entirely not the relationship. The relationship is how to behave in the active state with it, how to live with your fellow man for the first time in the active state of it, and how to trigger it whenever there's a tendency for it to go into discharge. It's like a battery. How to trigger on the recharging effect of it and keep it at the peak frequency. But the technique is simple. Do you see the simplicity of activating the eyelid?
I can't make it work.
No, well, is it wearing off now?
Yes.
Then start again. As soon as you feel it's wearing off, start again. Until this thing builds up enough charge. Yes. This is natural. Now, this similarity can be felt in taking a highball or taking a chemical agent. But they wear off to the extent that it leaves you nauseated. This has no nauseation in it, because instead of being pulled back here alone, the sensation of peace is here all the time, pulsating, like an inner pulsation. Right here, it's pulsating now. And you can feel it pulsating there as your consciousness dwells on it. And every time you close up and open, close and open, it widens the band like a variable condenser in a radio. You're changing the frequencies, thereby causing expansion of awareness all the time. You cannot do this with the drug, because you have no relation or control. All the controls have been taken out from under you. And you have to run the gamut of the experience in the drug. Here, you can turn on, switch off, go any way you want to, but still knowing that it's there, and flip it on all the time. This is what Jesus meant, if thine eye be single, the body is full of light.
Were we supposed to continue keeping our eyes focused?
Yes. This is the path of the masters. Because this is the techniques that release the cosmic consciousness in us. See, it is the release of a cosmic consciousness that is dormant in there. And this release is starting out with light and peace, bliss and awareness. And as you trim the lamp, you know, in the early Christian teachings, that's the way we take our traditional authority now, by trimming the lamp, by holding vigil, the 10 virgins who trim the lamp. In other words, it means utilizing the 10 avenues of your makeup to be aware and trim it. That is to sit in vigil and flip, you know, turn up and down. You are in control all the time. There is no external agent now impeding, or no external agent to rely on. Because you, the divine consciousness, is in control.
Dominic, if you practice this 15 minutes a day, would not this have a tendency gradually to extend throughout the day, the effect?
Yes, this is true. If you start off 10, 15 minutes in the morning, and before you lunchtime or so, another 10, 15 minutes, it spreads. And the evening time, after you finish work, 10, 15 minutes before you drive your car home, This is true. If you start off 10, 15 minutes in the morning, and before your lunchtime or so, another 10, 15 minutes, it spreads. And the evening time, after you finish work, 10, 15 minutes before you drive your car home. Again, every time you feel the buildup of tension in the nervous system, that is an overloading of static electricity in the cells. Anytime you feel this gloomy condition coming on, that is an overloading, flip it on. And it sort of agitates it back into normal rest. It causes everything to subside back into its present state. And you have this flow. It precipitates, it permeates you all the time. Yes?
Is it better, is it more effective before you take any food?
In the early stages, yes, but don't get hung up on the idea or fanatical on the idea that it can't be done after you eat, you see. Then this would be an untrue science. Science has nothing to do with that. It's practical and feasible and better to do it on an empty stomach. Like, you know, you tell your kid pray before your lunch or you eat. Human beings need to revitalize before consuming food because food is matter being broken down by the human mechanism into energy indirectly through the saliva process. Now, this is energy directly infusing itself from the reservoir of energy that is permeating you in this whole environment, and you are feeding off of it. This is your divine mother feeding you, or God is feeding you directly now because you have an alliance with him. Then the alliance is that when Jesus, the Master, says, "None come unto the Father but by me. Seek ye the kingdom of God which is within you. Then if thine eye be single, the body is full of light." These are only indications from a traditional authority as to the source of this direct flow. Do you follow now? That you have access.
I just want everybody to be able to see this.
In other words, then when we're meditating, we know that the blood's going to the head, but if you've eaten, then it's trying to go too far.
Right. It is slowing it. In other words, you are channeling off, you see. So it's wiser in the early stages to do it before eating. That does not say, I said before, that you cannot do after eating. Now, the point is, I have found in my own experiences and in research, when you take a drug on a full stomach, you have a certain result. You do meditation on a full stomach, you have a certain result. You take a drug on an empty stomach, you have a different result. You take a meditation on an empty stomach, you have a different result. I found the most feasible results is on a partially empty mechanism. I don't advise to load up the mechanism because it's an overload. It's like too much gas going to your carburetor. You're overloading. It's the same thing in your mechanism. If you have food, which is indirect energy, and then pulling down direct energy, there's going to be an overload. You see? Now, the important thing is the attitude all the time. Not to strain in any of this sitting down and trying to lock it on or open it, because there is no strain. In the first place, it is supposed to remove strain. Like the tranquilizer would do in the first place. It would remove the strains that are there, or the tension that is there. This is supposed to remove it and come through the mechanism. Is that clear to you, Katya?
Meditating for something very special, and something made me open my eyes and look at him, and here he was just blinking his eyes with his eyes rolled up, and I was wondering what on earth the expression of his face, and he was angry.
Yes, you see, the student...
It happened to me.
Right. You see, the student studying does not know all the information right away, but because students in colleges today are not waiting for all that information. Therefore, they are working with certain agents to try to experience something that the sages have been trying to point out by their own body mechanism. We have to update the truth in our mechanism. We have to communicate to suit the youth. We have to communicate to suit the adult that is caught in survival patterns. You see? Now, if you can't update this information to fit in, and if you can't experience it when you update it and apply it, then it has no relationship, as far as you're concerned, in the survival pattern. But if it's updated to fit in, and if you can see the linkage, the traditional linkage, the scientific linkage, and the actual application linkage with yourself in the material realm, where you earn your daily bread and live with your family and the responsibility that go with the family, then you have bridged the greatest truth about life itself. That's you know how to live in it now. You want to do something?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I don't know how to ask.
Ask, and it is given, but there's not a matter of how you ask. You see, how might interfere with what you really want to say?
But there seems to be so many sources, so many different books and different paths and different teachers saying somewhat similar things, but different things. We listened to your tape on the guru-student relationship, and it's been bothering me how one gets in contact with this guru or knows where to go for authority.
When you start, normally you want all the questions answered immediately before your practice. That is like learning to play the guitar. You want to play Bakshakon before you learn the scale. And you can't be trained by Segovia because he's not interested in teaching you scales. So he's going to tell you, you're wasting my time at the present moment. Go and learn the fundamentals of music, and I'll pick up with you when you're ready. Living masters do exist. But via the books, via the exposure to meditational circles, and people on the path help you to gain an understanding that when you come in the range of the living master, he will take up where you left off. That's why they say when the student is ready, he is there. Now, that moment starts the guru-disciple relationship. Prior to that, it's not guru-disciple relationship. Do you follow? Now, each one will be drawn to a living master when he has made the effort to reach that level. I certainly couldn't go and ask Mr. Segovia to teach me to play the guitar, and I don't know the fundamentals of the instrument. I'd be wasting my money and his time in the first place. That doesn't say you would not have some form of compassion or consideration or some information for me where to start off. You see? But if I went and got acquainted and made effort, and then I show some sign of promise in my effort, before I know it, someone is going to be recommending Mr. Segovia to me, or recommending that I be trained with Mr. Segovia. And sooner or later, in a cross current, we will meet Mr. Segovia. You see what I mean? So it's the same thing. You are exposed now in a search of yourself, and certain truths you need to know first about yourself right here to work with in this physical world. And as you get these truths and apply them gradually, you will be equipped mentally to understand a master's consciousness when he initiates you. Because that's what he's going to do for you. He's going to initiate you, and you're ready for the initiation, and then he will take over the inner training of your inner life. Though he will impose the disciplines at the same time, and they may be very harsh, because he doesn't make the disciplines easy. In fact, he speeds up the discipline on you. Now, if anyone has seen the master classes of Segovia on TV with students who went to play guitar, there was one boy who told Mr. Segovia, but my instrument don't play like that, and it don't sound like that. And he took the boy's instrument and played it note. He says, don't come back no more. You see what I mean? He was, these are kind of conditions that would exist. The masters don't waste time. They are interested to bring the soul back. But they are imposing the disciplines there whereby you are pulled in. But he hopes that you have already worked out fundamentals. You understand? And I'm glad that there are 100 people who've done all kind of experimental fundamentals can appreciate a guru-disciple relationship. You see, why I started the lectures with a guru-disciple relationship, to show that is where the final association ends between two beings. And the next level last night was the disciple's role, how he comes to control his emotional nature. Tonight I'm showing where the mass media of the human world is caught up, trying to find a way out. So we are, and that includes me at one time, in this mass media process, you see. We had to try and experiment and drop out and do all kind of crazy things till we wake up. In the meantime, we are asleep. That is, we are ignoring the truth of ourselves. So if you feel that the need for the guru is there, it will come. Because every desire and for God is fulfilled. Because your desire to know that you are soul cannot go unheard by any great master. But sometimes the great master may use little lesser individuals to give you encouragement till he knows you are ready for the full blast of his presence. Do you follow my friends here?
If we practice as you've shown us tonight, the more we go within ourselves, the more we will know from all this mass of books
Yes, you will have a measuring stick, right? You will have a measuring stick. Now let me show you an illustration. We have traditional authority. There was a man called John Baptizing and had many disciples around him. Yet he kept preaching. They come at one in whose shoes I cannot begin to step into. And he not baptized by water, but by spirit. That means inner word relationship now. I'm doing a physical patting you on the back, boy, and start to get you encouraged to get into this thing. And when he did come, and he was initiated by John, and then came down the mountain, John turned to his own disciples and said, there goes the master. Now, people say, John must be stupid, he wanted to get rid of the best thing he had, disciples around him, but not so. They were ready now to accept from the long mass of assimilation and analysis. And we have such a person existing on the earth plane all the time. These are masses, they're there. Many people have been fortunate, and many are waiting. But that doesn't say you are not going to be fortunate too. As long as you sift out, you will come to that one important thing. You will have that relationship. You cannot be denied the relationship. It solves the problem. Now you see.
It doesn't solve the problem, but
it at least explains it. Well, India is the land that has brought forth masters. But masters who walk the earth do not confine themselves to India. And they have worked in the earth of America and in American soil, and they have gathered home into their consciousness many Americans who live and work like you and I and have the daily turmoils. And there are teeming millions in India who are not even gathered in by those very masters where they were born. You follow what I'm saying? When the soul nature of the individual, regardless of the location on the earth, by his initial effort to seek God, the manifested master will be there for that moment. But he has observed you long before you realize he exists. In other words, there is a master, and it's there. But your part now in the process is to prepare yourself. You know, the Boy Scouts used to say, be prepared. And Jesus gave a parable, trim your lamps lest the bridegroom any cometh like a thief in the night. A master may walk through this room, and he may be like the thief in the night as far as the inner consciousness is concerned in your makeup, and you cannot recognize him. But he has recognized you. But if you were trimming the lamp, you will have an inner experience of his real nature, and then when you see him in the flesh, a greater inner experience of him. That's all I'm trying to say. Because there are certain things that will recognize the master. It's there, it's not an imagination. There are genuine spiritual laws that satisfy the devotee. Of all the teeming books, the masters only teach one truth all the time. And I say the masters, I don't mean the teachers. There's a big difference between a master and a teacher. A manifested master is one who has achieved all levels of awareness and returns with the full responsibility of lifting you up back there. Therefore, he goes before you when you are ready to go behind him. Now, I know some people who have known of a manifested master living in India, and they spent umpteen dollars to get to India to sit at his ashram. And they were there. And in his and parting from the master, he said, you can only take what you have brought, but I'm always with you. So meditate wherever you are. If you brought a small limited degree of understanding of life, let's size a cup, and you go to someone with a pitcher of water, and if the cup is only one pint, certainly it's not going to extend itself to 2 pints. You'll get 1 pint full. But happy to know that this brain that the Creator has made is not a restricted 1 pint cup principle. It's an ever-expanding principle. You see? It's like a variable condenser. Therefore, it will expand more and more to absorb the Guru, to absorb the cosmic principle. So, if you want to go to India, or you prefer to prepare yourself, that master can meet you right here in America. But India is the place where these masters have their ashram. Now you know where the thing is. Segovia lives in Spain. He gives classical concerts every year in America, and students flock, yet he only selects a few to his personal attention. That doesn't say he has no compassion for the rest with information and so forth. The great masters live in the ashram of India. That doesn't say they don't come to America to lecture. But when they come, if you are ready from within yourself, you will have the experience. And as she said, of all them that have called out, this one here is locked on. Solve it. You got it? But then you must appreciate the guru-disciple relationship from then on. You'd have to learn to appreciate what you've got. Some people have been initiated by great masters and don't appreciate the relationship. You see? And are still searching. Though they're having an inner awareness, they don't know for sure properly. So this, again, is why I said the greatest relationship that exists between man is the guru-disciple relationship. Now, even Jesus had 12 disciples, and at a critical moment, it wasn't the guru who let them down, it's they who let the guru down, but he told them their defects in themselves, and they acted out their defects. One would deny him when the cock crow thrice, and now he's going to run away. So the guru knows that. And when he was collecting them, he already knew where they were. If you read your scriptures, you will see this awareness is all-reaching. It's cosmic consciousness. It knows in this room when that master consciousness will pull. How many will pull in? It's there because that inner light is shining all the time. That's why it's such a sacred relationship between the disciple and the guru. Okay. Yeah?
Is there any significance behind any of the other colors besides red, gold, green?
If you see the red, which I did not mention, was then you we're not at this moment interested in his presence. We're only interested in gold, blue, and white. Now, if we see the gold, blue, and white, we have to train ourselves to adjust to it until that light itself does what it's supposed to do for you, then you would not ask me, because in there the experience itself will open up for you. You will see what each one of these three colors will do. It's that where God is. It's in that level. God is the teacher. God is the real guru, not the human man. The human man is not the guru. The human man is a filter for the eternal light, acting as an example to another form who have need of light. See, I have need of light, so I look to a master in form. But behind the master, I have the reality that is the eternal light that is passing to me, that holds me up as a form. So I want to know, he tells me there are three distinct colors that I must be aware of. I don't want to sidetrack myself, so I must make the effort to see these three distinct colors. And I must work with them. That is the discipline implied. So, don't feel frustrated or disappointed if you're not getting results right away. Because sooner or later it has to come of its own nature. This is fundamental. Let's put it like the insurance people. By the law of averages, you're bound to end up having one experience of it. Mathematics alone will let you experience it, you see? So, but the goal is the cosmic vibration or Holy Spirit. And the gifts thereof are many. Some people speak in tongues, healing and so forth. But that's only one aspect. The blue is the Christ intelligence or the intuitive nature present in the whole of creation. And the white is cosmic consciousness present in and out of creation. Now, this